Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another virtual episode of Deadline's New Hollywood Podcast. My name is
At Home Edition.
At Home, Q-teen.
At Home. Did you say your name already?
Yes.
I must have talked. Sorry. Okay. I'm Amanda Nduka. And so today we have as our guest the star of the new Netflix series that is from Damien Chazelle, Andre Holland.
Yeah, Andre. Okay. I will say this about Andre. Like, after we got off our Zoom call with him, his voice, for real, I'm like, yeah. It's so soothing. It calmed me.
Yeah,
and he seems so even tempered and lovely just to be around. He had a bunch of books behind him. I called
right.
it out.
Right.
The ice cream man came in the middle of it.
So the Eddie, the Eddie's about. So the Eddie's, it's really interesting. So it's set in Paris, and it's about Andre's character's name is Elliot. And it's about basically, I mean, it's sort of in this backdrop of jazz, the jazz music world, but it's really about his relationship with his daughter.
His daughter. And his life, just his own life.
Yeah.
And of course, you guys know Andre. He's been on so many things now. It's, I got first introduced to him through Moonlight, but then he was also on The Nick. He was in Selma. He was in, 42. And
American Horror Story.
American Horror Story. He's been in a bunch of things. And, Castle Rock. He's been in a bunch. But his latest, The Eddie, is I think, a very interesting, different, and I don't think it's, like, different, but it's a very interesting story for him to dive in. And he goes into it in the episode.
Right. Yeah. It's very, like, high concept. And it's, like, it's a mixture between English and he had to learn how to speak French. And he had to learn how to play instruments. But it's a really good show. If you haven't checked it out, it's currently on Netflix.
And it also stars friend of the podcast, Amandla. so she's in it, too.
So without further ado, here is Andre. Andre, thank you so much for joining us today.
Of course, I'm happy to be here. Thank y'all for inviting me.
Welcome to the New Hollywood Podcast. Yes. So before we begin, how have you been doing during this time?
Yeah.
Oh, thanks for asking. I've been doing okay. I'm so fortunate, you know, in that my family is okay for the most part. And, you know, I worked recently, so I'm okay at the moment. I'm in a better situation than a lot of people, so I'm grateful for that, and trying to be helpful when and how I can to other people.
Have you read all those books behind you?
Yeah.
Oh man, I've read a lot of them, most of them. I got a few up there that I haven't gotten to yet, but they're my favorite.
It's a nice setup. I do love it when there's books in the back, you know. It, like, these Zoom calls now, you know, you learn a lot about people through their backgrounds.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I like your photos you got back there too. Gallery wall. Yeah.
My gallery and my guitar that hasn't been played for 5 years because it's missing a string.
But it's a good decoration piece though.
Oh, my guitar? Yeah.
So, Andre, have you been using this time, like, how have you been using this time? Like, are you somebody who's sort of just relaxing and reflecting? Are you working and to the extent that you can work? Are you TikToking? Like, what kind of things?
Cooking, banana bread, hobbies.
Challenges. Like,
You know, it's funny. I've been making really good use of the time. I've been doing a lot of reading, which is important to me, as you can see. So I've gotten a chance to read a bunch of stuff that I've been wanting to for a while. I've been doing some gardening, which I have a little terrace here, and I inherited a garden, but I didn't really know much about it, so I've been learning a bit about that. Also, I'm producing some stuff now as well, so I've been using the time to get some things to sort of move forward in that regard too. So it's been cool.
Yeah.
Pandemic giveth, I guess.
Yeah. What are you growing? What are you growing on your terrace?
Oh, man. So I have, here you can see.
Oh, Oh, exclusive.
So you can.
Oh, maybe, that's a nine.
I don't know if you can see, but so we have like there's some irises there. There's some.
That's a nice setup.
It's cool. There's like I planted some collard greens the other day.
I was gonna ask if you're planting any vegetables.
Collards, kale. All kind of stuff growing up.
That's a nice like little terrace you have there.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool, especially at this time. You know, it's nice to have some outdoor space without having to go to the parks or be out on the street. So it's cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, Andre, we've seen you in many things.
Many things
from Moonlight to The Knit to American Horror Story. But where did this all begin for you in terms of your entertain? Like, what sparked your interest in being an entertainer?
You know, I think about this a lot. I've been thinking about it a lot lately too. I think for me, you know, I grew up in Alabama, and my grandfather was a preacher, a Pentecostal preacher. And so I think that like storytelling, the performance that, you know, that the church can provide was really inspiring to me. I also grew up in a place where we didn't really have access to, you know, the film, and we didn't have like a VCR to watch movies, and the TV only had two or three channels. So most of the time we had, my sisters and I, as kids, was spent like sitting on people's front porches, listening to them tell stories. And so I think for me, it's always been more about storytelling than about like being an entertainer. You know, the career kind of came as a byproduct of my curiosity and interest in stories.
And when you first started out, what kind of roles were you getting offered or having to go out for auditions for?
At the beginning, I was going up for any and everything. I mean, everything from the hood characters, the thugs, the drug dealers, like I did, you know, all of that stuff. I mean, I was pretty resistant to that fairly early on, but at the very beginning, you sort of go for everything, you know what I mean? Did a lot of comedies, which surprises people sometimes because so much of what I've been doing lately has been more drama. But
you got some heavy stuff going on.
So a little bit of everything. And then theater, you know, for me, theater played a big part and still does. So you know, if I did a TV thing, I would always, you know, come back and do two plays. Usually it was mostly theater.
Was there a point in your career early on where you felt like you could really sort of take control over the kind of roles that you played?
A good question. I think it wasn't until The Knit came along that I felt like that I started to feel I had that agency. Not even that agency, that responsibility, I should say. That move, that show, and then this movie 42, which I did kind of around the same time. In 42, I remember in researching the part that I was playing, which is Wendell Smith, this black, legendary black sports writer, journalist. I uncovered so much about his life, and what, you know, the movie's about Jackie Robinson. There's only so much time in the movie, and we didn't really get to explore Wendell's story, but I felt this responsibility to somehow find a way to convey in the small moments that I did have just how important he was, you know? And I think feeling that sense of responsibility stuck with me. So the same, you know, was true with The Knick. And now when I choose things, yeah, it's always about like, what does this project say about me, about the community that I'm from? Is it like additive in terms of like the movement or is it reductive, and the stuff that's not well made, I try to stay away from.
Like, what really attracts you to project? What does a project sort of have to have in order for you to want to be a part of it?
Well, can y'all hear that ice cream truck? Hold on, let me close this window. I'm sorry.
I thought you were going to say, hold on, let me be right back, and you were going to get some ice cream.
Nah, Mr. Softy is coming through.
You're like, oh, Mr. Softy's coming, I'll be right back, guys.
No, sorry, I didn't want to, you know.
No, that's fine.
Everybody.
Go ahead.
What attracts me, usually if a part has something to teach me, like, I mean, every part does, but I'm usually attracted to those things that I feel like I don't know that much about. You know what I'm saying? So like with The Knick, I had never thought about black doctors at the turn of the century, you know? So that was interesting to me. Similarly with 42, you know, I knew a bit about Jackie Robinson, as we all do to a degree, but I didn't know anything about, really, about the Negro Leagues,
right?
About what Jackie Robinson integrated Major League Baseball meant for this really important Black business at the time. So that usually attracts me first. And then like the writing, you know, when the writing is good, you know, the ride is usually fun, but when it's bad, everybody suffers. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, now you're in the show, the series, The Eddie, and it is so, it feels so French. Like it feels like you're like immersed. It is like, you're no joke, but you know, and you know, you mentioned like writing attracts you, but this, it does seem very different from, you know, things that you have done in the past, but you know, was there something about the Eddie, that even just your character or the story that spoke to you, that, you know, you were just like, oh, this is something like I really want to do.
Yeah, for sure. It scared the bejesus out of me. Yeah. To be honest with you, because it was like, you know, this really, you know, difficult dude, you know, who, and I couldn't understand what he was trying to do, what his thing was. There were some days where I felt like, is this just like a, not a stereotype, but like a caricature, like an idea of what a person like this may be, or is this really a human being? And it took me a while to get to the point, but when I realized that what he really was wrestling with was grief, for me, that really spoke to me. At the time, and this probably happens a lot, I think at the time this opportunity came along, I was dealing with some stuff in my own life around grief. And so it gave me an opportunity, I think, to learn more about myself. One of the books on the shelf back here is this book, this dope book called On Grief and Grieving, which I carried around with me a lot while we were shooting. And it really, in working on the part, it helped me to kind of work through my own stuff. So it was dope.
Yeah. You know, and like I said, it just not only feels French, like it feels like jazz music. The whole thing feels like a jazz composition. Like it feels like it. But before you signed on, were you a huge jazz fan? Were you familiar with that world? And also, you know, since you are in Paris in the show, did you speak French? And, you know, how did you just dive into this? It almost feels like a hyper-realistic world.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't really know that much about jazz music. I have some friends who play. A friend of mine, John Baptiste, is a dope, dope musician. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he and I have been friends for a long time, and I would go see him play, hear him play rather. And we worked on a project together many years ago. So I always like was a fan, but I didn't really know much about the process of like making jazz. I didn't play music myself. So it was a real opportunity for me to learn. I grew up around music. So a lot of soul music. You see Marvin back here.
Yeah. I was pointing that out. What's that right next to it?
I'm in a strange town. It's just, I love, like, I thought, like, gospel is a big, I like gospel music as well, and like old sermons. So that is a collection from this this old preacher who had this. He would go to these revival meetings with these two big, like, paper mache wings attached to his back. And he called himself, I think he calls himself the two wing preacher or something like that. But it's a recording of some of his old sermons.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah, but talking about performance and just, you know, being able to captivate a crowd, it's really, it's really powerful. So yeah, kind of a random decision.
But yeah. So yeah. You said you never played instruments before either. So did, like, you're convincing in the Eddie. Like, I'm like, oh, I'm sold. But did you actually have to learn? Like, what was just the whole process in just getting ready for this role? Because, like you said, it scared you, and it seemed very demanding because of the nuance of the character and of the story itself.
Yeah, it was tough. It really asked a lot. You know, the music we started, I started, like, from the day I said yes to the part. I had two different piano teachers here in New York that I was working with. And then when I got to Paris, I had another amazing, like, piano teacher / singing teacher named Danny Weirich, who's, the dude is just super dope. So he and I worked together a lot. Basically, anytime we weren't shooting on set, I was either playing, you know, practicing the piano or having French rehearsal, French lessons or whatever. So it was a pretty full-on immersive experience. And with the French, I studied in school, and j'habite dans Paris pour 5 mois, mais
okay, then.
Comme un vache espagnol. I studied there. Sorry, I'm just being silly.
I'm just going to act like that. I'm being silly.
No, I'm being silly. And I studied for a little while. I lived there for a little while, a long time ago. But my French is not so good. It's I understand.
Well, it sounds like you. It just sounded like you lived there for a year. So you could have just said, you know, I'm eating a sandwich, and I'll be like, that sounds fine. I mean, I've been to Paris once, and it was. I really want to go back. But yeah, just the whole thing just looked beautiful, and how it was shot. Made me feel like cool. I was there again.
Same for me, man. Like I was just being silly by speaking French. Y'all ain't
gonna say no. I've had too much coffee today, so I'm just like being goofy. I'm still having my first coffee.
But yeah, like, you know, I've been to France several times before, but that part of France that we were filming in, I had never experienced before. You know, like, I seen the Eiffel Tower and the Louvre and all the stuff that people tend to see, which is gorgeous and beautiful, but like getting to see these other parts where like there's so much diversity, you know, there's so much creativity happening.
What part did you guys film in?
So we filmed a lot in like Belleville, okay, which is a part of the 11th arrondissement.
Oh, it's like the triplets of Belleville, that there was an animated
feature, oh, I never right? saw that. I remember hearing about that, but I never saw it.
Yeah.
But I imagine it probably is set in the same district if it has that name. But it's a really cool area. It feels a lot like Brooklyn, you know, a lot of artists are there, and it's just a working class neighborhood, but it was really beautiful.
What would you say the show that Eddie sort of brings to the conversation about the culture of jazz, and how do you think it plays into the story of Elliot?
Well, one thing that was really important to me and to Amandala, and to Damien, to be fair, is that culture, Black people's contribution to music, to jazz music, that be recognized and honored. And even though the story is set in contemporary Paris, and it's not about, you know, the Black musicians who came to Paris to play, you know, many years before, still I felt it was important to honor that. So, that's another thing about the story that I enjoyed is how Elliot and Julie's relationship, how it develops over time and it becomes about culture and identity and her need to find her identity. And in some way, I think what Elliot is in search of is for a way to reconnect to his own culture. You know, he as I imagine him, is a guy who has had a big successful career. He's played Carnegie Hall and all the different places, and, you know, and maybe has spent too much time playing the music that people expect him to play and not spend enough time playing his own music, the music that comes from his soul. And so for me, it was about like reconnecting to that while Julie is also trying to connect her own identity. And I think through that, what they discover is that, yeah, this shared culture that they have, this shared music that they have, it is like the first place that they can and need to connect.
Yeah. How would you say, would you say that music also could kind of influence or had an influence in your career?
I mean, in a way, you know, I, as I say, I love music. I find it very useful when I'm, you know, working. Like I did a play a couple of years ago and was having a really, really difficult time with it. And created some playlists and things that really, really helped me get through the performances. You know what I mean? Like it can be so moving and can like touch a chord that nothing else can seem to pluck. So it's been super helpful to me in terms of like my development as an actor.
It is very interesting. You know, you mentioned identity, and I think it's very interesting that the series is set in France, Paris, and you know, you guys, and then the father and the daughter reconnecting through jazz, but at the same time they have like it's very nuanced, like was what I'm saying, very complicated, and I'm not that smart of a guy, so I'm like, oh, this is just too confusing for me. Being in the industry and, you know, being in so many different kinds of roles, what have you learned about yourself, your cultural identity, and how have you used that to kind of sculpt your craft and, you know, leave the mark that you want to leave?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we asked the really tough questions.
I see, we're going in. Well, I mean, I think that is still very much a work in progress in terms of figuring out how, like what impact I want to have over time. And maybe, maybe it's a thing that just evolves on its own, right? It just becomes a result of a number of decisions made over time. But what I can say is at this moment, what's become clear to me, given the work that I've done and experiences that I've had, is that presenting stories about my culture in a way, in ways that are positive, that doesn't always mean nice and pretty, right? Mm. But in ways that are three-dimensional and that are respectful of where we actually have come from and what we've actually been through, is of the utmost importance to me. Also finding ways to help amplify voices of other people like me who have come from, you know, marginalized communities who maybe haven't found their way into this business is really important to me. I had a call not long ago with a producer who, as we were talking about trying to cast this project, said to me, he questioned this actress's value, right? This term that gets thrown around in our business about like what value does an actor have to a project? And I understand that it's a math problem, right? Like trying to put together a movie. But what I understand is that for people, particularly, I mean, I would argue, especially I think about Black women, you know, who are trying to find a way in this business, it's difficult, damn near impossible, you know, to put yourself into a position where you end up on one of these lists, right, that people use to pick and put their projects together. So I think that we have to redefine what that word value means, and we got to define it on our own terms, you know, and we can't wait on other people to find value in us. We got to find it in ourselves and in each other. And so I see an enormous amount of value in the people who I meet here in New York, the actresses, the writers, the directors, who, you know, aren't the famous ones, but who have good ideas, you know what I mean? And sometimes I think this business would lead you to believe that only a few people hold a monopoly on good ideas. But in fact, they can come from anywhere. And I think, you know, it's my responsibility to continue to send the ladder down and keep doors open and invite more people to the table.
Yeah, it's that, right? Because we had a couple of people from Hollywood on. I don't know if you've seen that Netflix, the Netflix series.
I haven't, but I've seen the advertisement.
It flips the whole, like, you know, Hollywood sort of ideology narrative on its side. And it's like, what if, you know, people of color, LGBTQ people, women, were given the opportunity, the same opportunities as our white male counterparts? And just to think that, you know, this was in what, 1940 something? That's
Amazing. Like the golden age of Hollywood. Yeah.
That we're still having this sort of conversation, and then there's still such a barrier for people of color, women, LGBTQ. I mean, obviously it's getting better, but it's sort of daunting that we're still having this conversation.
Yeah. And it's so weird. I saw an article the other day, and it was like, all, is this pandemic halting diversity in Hollywood? And I'm just like, I don't understand why it would, and why that would be part of the conversation. And, you know, especially, you know, now, you know, with the Black community and Latinx community getting really impacted by COVID, like these two communities are getting slammed by it because of the access they don't have. And also the Asian American community getting, you know, just harassed all the time. It does make me think about, you know, what is this going to be on the other side for us, you know? And like, it makes me scared, it makes me anxious, but there's like some hope in it. Like, I see a lot of like communities like coming together. And I think what Andre was saying about kind of I think Lena said the same thing, letting that ladder down. And Wilson Cruz, who I love when Wilson was on our podcast, he said, rise up and reach back, you know. Yeah, and I there was recently a panel with Franklin Leonard, and I forgot who else was on there, John M. Chu, called Black and Gold, and about how marginalized communities need to, there has to be this kind of synergy between all of us in order to kind of move us forward. And especially with being Asian, just seeing what's happening to our community right now. And during this panel, they were just they were saying to a lot of the Asian community, welcome to our world. The Black community was saying to the Asian community, welcome to our world. This is how we've been treated all along. And, you know, the Asian community has constantly been seen as the model minority. But now with this COVID thing, where a lot of us are, well, not me, but, you know, there's not a day that goes by when I go through Twitter or my Facebook feed where someone's being harassed because of this pandemic, because they think we started it or we think Chinese people started it. So that's my rant.
Listen, preach on. Oh,
you're right. Yeah. I think seeing Andre, your body of work, it's so diverse in this weird way. You know, I first got introduced to you through Moonlight, which I remember watching that at TIFF and just, that wrecked me. And then just to see your trajectory and then seeing you on Castle Rock and all this genre driven stuff, and now Eddie, it's kind of just amazing to see you grow.
thank you. Okay, I appreciate it.
I want to ask, when you do these films, when you do these projects, do you sort of keep the audience in mind in terms of what you would like them to take away from all these different characters you play and all these projects that you're a part of?
Yeah, for sure.
What would you say that would be for the Eddie?
Well, it was important to me that people understood that he's a man who's dealing with grief, and that he's not just a bad father, an absent father, or, you know, an angry man. Like, that there's a reason why he's behaving in this way. Especially as a Black man inhabiting that part, I felt an added responsibility to make completely sure that we understood why his behavior was as it was. Also, as we talked about before, the cultural part of it, you know, it was important to me that we not just, you know, put some Black people in the show and not really acknowledge the culture, you know what I mean? So that was something that became really important to us all. And it depends, you know, every time it's a different thing. And it also depends on the moment that we're in, right? Yeah, with Moonlight, I remember feeling like, you know, when I first read the script, you know, there's not a lot there to go on in terms of the last scenes, the last third of the film. There's a lot of silence, a lot of unspoken things. And so I felt like, well, it's really important for me to understand what it is that I want the audience to feel, that what I want to communicate, you know. And for me, it was about making space. How can one person just make space for another? What does that look like? You know what I mean? That's what it was.
Yeah, that's kind of deep. So what's next for you? I know you're doing, because I wrote the story, The Passing movie, and this is one of my favorite books. Mm-hmm. Did you guys finish shooting that before everything shut down?
Yeah, we finished shooting in a couple of months before, actually. I don't remember the day, maybe December or January, but we finished.
Okay. But do you know when that's going to come out, or obviously everything, a lot of things are delayed because of do you have any idea of when that's going to be released, or?
I don't actually. Okay. I emailed not long ago with the director, and she was saying that it's looking really good, and people are excited about it, but I don't know anything in terms of dates.
Looking forward to that one.
And then that even just that discussion
passing, that's
definitely a discussion that the Black community has been going back and forth about for years when it comes to colorism and who is more at an advantage in society. So I think honestly I'm kind of surprised we don't talk about it more.
I think in general, I don't think a lot of Hollywood talks about passing or colorism in general. Yeah, I mean, because they don't see it as a problem, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's a blind spot. And I'm glad that passing is coming on. I think Nina Yang Bon Jovi is yeah. producing, right? She's yes. She is, right?
Just real, yeah. like super real, super smart. Just she's dope. I can't say enough about it.
Yeah.
I can't wait for that though. But yeah.
What else can you tell us about?
Yeah. What can we break? What can we break? Well,
there's not a lot to break right now. You know, I'm really slow when it comes to choosing to do things. I take a lot of time, and you know, there's nothing that I'm attached to doing right now. There's some things that I'm building, that I'm producing, that I'm excited about, but they're in various stages of development. So yeah, at the moment, I'm just trying to like stay safe and take care of my folks as best I can, and my friends and the community. And I trust that when this is all over, you know, hopefully there'll be something interesting for me to be involved in.
Are you doing a sequel to High Flying Bird?
Well, that's one of the things that I've been working on. Yeah, okay. When we started talking about it, you know, years ago, I think we always felt that it was like a bigger idea. And then, yeah, when we finished the first film, I think we all sort of felt like, man, there's more to explore here. Yeah, so we're working through that.
So Andre, like I was saying, we like to end the interview. It's sort of in a smart, like random questions. We call it the facts or the FAQs. So the first question is, what was your first concert?
Ooh, wow. It was a long time before I went to a concert, but I think it was Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Ooh, that's a good one.
That would be, yeah.
Wait, Amanda, what was yours? Do you remember
Backstreet
yours?
Boys. I think Backstreet Boys. Hey. Backstreet Boys.
So.
Mine was Color Me Bad at SeaWorld.
Oh, wow.
So that, okay, I shouldn't have admitted that. Anyways.
Maybe not.
So Andre, what is the one thing that your friends and family would say that you have an unhealthy, geek-worthy obsession with?
An unhealthy, geek-worthy obsession. Wow, I guess it depends on which friends. Well, I'm obsessed with vintage cars.
Okay.
I have a friend who says sometimes, like, why are you fooling with those old beat up, rusty looking things? You know, stop wasting your time and money on those. Other friends used to say that I had an unhealthy obsession with musicals because I was a big fan of musicals.
Oh, good. Well, then there's nothing wrong with that.
I think so too. Yeah. Let me live.
Are you doing more Broadway in the future?
Oh yeah, I really. I mean, I want to. I was supposed to be doing Shakespeare in the Park this summer. In fact, today was going to be our opening night if we had been able to do it. So, yeah. So hopefully, I was gonna play Richard II.
Oh, those complicated ones.
Yeah, tough ones. Yeah.
Anytime there's a Shakespeare play where there's just one name, like Richard or Henry, I'm like on those. I stay away from those.
I'm bad at remembering Shakespeare's stuff, so I don't. I didn't do well in my class. Okay, would you rather be super sensitive to taste or super sensitive to hearing?
Probably super sensitive to hearing, so I could go around ear hustling and hear what people say, listening to people's conversations. Like,
that is good.
I think I'm like nosy by nature, so I definitely would choose like a hearing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I think super sensitive taste would be good if you wanted to be like a chef or a cook.
Yeah, or that's true.
Like a sommelier or something like that. Yeah. But yeah. That'd super sensitive. Cool. I think you could benefit more from because you could hear people's business.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, wait, you can't. Well, I see that you have physical media in the back, like albums. But what was the last physical album, CD, or cassette you can remember buying?
Woo! Wow. Well, the last album probably was this one, this Blues.
Oh, that one. Album.
Yeah, oh, wow. I bought it in Paris.
A few months ago
before this started. Yeah, I found it at this like old, it was like a coffee shop slash record store.
I'm so glad those still exist.
Yeah. Do you remember buying a cassette?
I think the last cassette would have been in like high school.
Yeah.
Was it like a single, like one of those?
Nah, I mean, you
they
know,
they were what like a dollar at Walmart.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Nobody want. It was Rent.
Oh, music. Good. Yeah. On cassette.
Yeah, I played it. Good. I used to play it all the time. Yeah.
Did you guys used to, I mean, this is what I did. I don't know if everybody did it, but did you guys used to record radio stations on cassette?
Yes, of course. And then you would get really mad when the DJ would come in at the end of the song and interrupt it. And he would
get like the first half of the song, but it's like, dang, I didn't press play on or record on time. And you
did it. I remember I did used to call in into a show in San Antonio when I lived there. They would like at 9 o'clock, it would always be all, okay, guys, there'd be all, call in for your beeper calls, and then you would give a shout out to your friends. So I would always call in and record myself. Oh God, I'm just embarrassing myself this whole thing.
That's a fine face to face. Okay, if you were given a budget to make and star in a movie based on an icon's life, based on a book or an existing story, what would it be?
Unlimited.
Who would you like to play? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man. So many people. I would probably say, can I say a couple? Like I gotta say one.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Marvin Gaye, I think.
Oh, okay.
Ooh, I could.
This is just like wish list, right? Like I'm not trying to lobby for this or say that I'm right for it, but yeah. But like Marvin would be dope. Prince would be dope.
I want a Prince life. See?
I see that picture right there. Prince would be dope. Frederick Douglass, I think, would be a really good character to explore. There's so many of our stories that haven't been told. There's a book called All God's Dangerous, which I really love. It's an autobiography of this sharecropper who lived in Alabama named Ned Cobb. Or Nate Shaw is the name of the book. I'd love a chance to play him. There's so many people.
Yeah. Oh, I love the Marvin Gaye idea.
Just do a whole anthology.
Yeah.
And then our last question is, you kind of touched on this already earlier in our conversation, but is there an underrepresented voice in the industry, whether it's an actor, writer, producer, storyteller, that you think deserves more shine and they're not in the mainstream that you kind of just want to give a shout out to? And again, you could list multiple people.
It's a tough one, but there's a lot of people. I would say there's an actor who's a friend of mine named John Michael Hill, who people know who he is, and he's definitely like well respected, but I think he's just brilliant, like a really, really brilliant, brilliant actor. So I'd say him. Who else?
There's a
Dominique.
Lot.
Dominique Mariso is a writer who she wrote the Temptations musical that was on
Broadway. Oh, nice.
She's written some for television she's written some of the most beautiful, exquisite plays. So I would love to see her, you know, get more opportunities to write things in film and TV.
She wrote the Ain't Too Proud.
Yep.
Oh wow, we just had Jeremy on.
Yeah, Jeremy.
Yeah.
He's so talented.
Yeah, like next level.
God, next level. He's so talented that it's sickening.
But Andre, thank you so much for meeting us. Thank you for being here with us. The Eddie is currently on Netflix.
So get into it.
Thanks again, Andre.
Thank you all so much. Yeah, I appreciate it. Y'all stay safe.
You too.
You too. Thank you.
Bye.